Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to talk about that one play. And in this case, the one play is a very weird one. It's the game-ending holding call on the punt that won, allowed the Ravens to win the game against the Bengals at home in 2014. Just an outstandingly weird play. We've seen it, of course, before in Ravens games. And here to talk about it with me is Nick Hall. Nick, how you doing?
Great. It's really great to talk to you, Ken. I believe it was 2016 was the game.
Did I say another year? 2014 or something? Okay, very good. You're right, 2016. So good stuff. Let's set it up a little bit for us, Nick. And first of all, tell us kind of why you chose this play, why it was important to you, and then set up the game itself.
Sure. This is a play that I'll never forget, the way it ended the game in a weird way. And boy, it just seemed to be a different time for the Ravens. They seemed to pull out games in very strange manners. And I seem to have a lot of faith of them to do that. And this is one of those times.
Flacco was a very clutch player in a lot of ways in terms of getting the team the yardage they needed, particularly if they needed a field goal. But also occasionally when they needed a touchdown against Pittsburgh, certainly in 2010 and in 2011, both years at Pittsburgh, he threw essentially game sealing touchdowns in the final seconds. So definitely had more of a record of a clutch quarterback than probably a lot of people remember him for. A lot of the people who watched the later Flacco years when he wasn't that good, I think their memories tend to get crusty about how good Joe was in the early years.
Yeah.
So this 2016 team coming off that horrible injury infested 2015, talk about it a little bit.
Yeah. And then 2016, they started out 3-0, but then they went on to lose 5 of the next 7. And that included a 4-game losing streak where Mark Trestman was fired as OC and Marty Morenweg was replaced him. And at this point, the Ravens were 5-5 and they really needed a win. And Cincy, man, Baltimore had just been struggling with Cincy. They'd lost 5 straight meetings with them. And the Bengals really seemed to always have Joe Flacco's number. He really struggled with them. I mean, the interceptions alone, the Cincy defense really knew how to play him.
Yeah, this Cincinnati defense of that era was one of the teams that could get consistent 4-man pressure. And by the way, if you can only do one thing well in the NFL, if you can get consistent 4-man pressure, you can do a lot of things defensively because your secondary will generally hold up even if it's not that great. If your front four is getting pressure, and Cincinnati never really had to rush numbers against Flacco in this era. And even though Ronnie Stanley, I guess, was in his rookie season this year, they were able with Carlos Dunlap and with others to get pressure on a fairly consistent basis that was forcing Flacco to get rid of the ball. And Joe had a bad way of not recognizing closing windows on intermediate routes in particular. Mm-hmm. And against Cincinnati, that ended up with some tip balls and some interceptions.
Certainly. In this game, Flacco threw a beautiful touchdown pass to Breshad Perriman in the first quarter in the corner of the end zone. And then Dalton threw a touchdown to Tyler Eifert. And that was it for touchdowns in the game. The rest were field goals. And this really starts going in the fourth quarter. It's a 19-12 game. And the Bengals are driving. They're on the Baltimore 45 with 2:30 left. And on the next 8 Dalton pass attempts, the defense is able to knock down 4 balls. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. Suggs knocks down 1. Judon gets 2. I think Urban gets another maybe. And really, one was like just right out of the reach of Mosley. They could have had 5. But the defense is playing tough. regardless, the Bengals, they're able to convert a couple more first downs and they get all the way to the 16-yard line. It's third and 10 with a minute 12 left. Baltimore shows pressure. Everybody is up on the line, but Mosley and Weddle. And Doomerville is able to beat the tackle around the edge for a strip sack of Dalton. And Lawrence Guy recovers the fumble. And it's everything they needed in that last minute left of the game.
Great to see them get off the field defensively. That's something that the Ravens of all years have not been able to do. But that 2016 team, it actually did it against Jacksonville as well early in that season. And so they had a little bit of mojo.
For sure. Yeah, that was one of those early wins in the season where they looked like they were going to be really good. So there's a minute five left. Cincy has two timeouts and Baltimore runs three plays and they can't convert a first down. The game clock runs all the way down to 11 seconds. They take a delay of game. And that's when this play really happens.
So they're at their own 28-yard line setting up this play, and they're going to have to punt. And I don't know what year it was or how much earlier it had been. I think it had been a number of years earlier that the Giants punted the ball back to DeSean Jackson, and he went the distance on a fumble
punt. Yeah. That was the last game of the season, I think, to get them into the playoffs. I think the Giants were knocked out of the playoffs with that return. Yes. Yep. Right. So punting late in games can be quite dangerous, no matter how little time is left on the clock. Mm-hmm. So they're getting ready to punt. They're in punt formation. All of a sudden, the gunners move in to close to the tackles for tight punt protection. And on the snap, everyone starts holding their man. And holding their man. I mean, when I'm watching it, you can find it on YouTube, Matt Elam, he takes his man to the ground. Morgan Cox gets knocked on his back, but he's holding on, getting dragged on his back. Several players are on the ground. And all the while, Cook is running around in the end zone near the out of bounds, waiting for time to expire. And right as time runs out, he steps out for a safety. And there's flags all over the field.
What I remember about it, like, very starkly, was when watching the game when I got home, is that the announcers lose all ability to make a call. Like, they for whatever reason, they didn't see it coming in Super Bowl 47, which was the first time the Ravens pulled this, of course, and they didn't see it coming this time either, for whatever reason, even though it's, you know, it had been done. So this was the second time Harbaugh had done it to attempt to close out a game. They came close against the 49ers. But this game, just as you described, everybody's bear hugging somebody and they can't figure out what the strategy is. Flags all over the place, you know, kind of thing, but they can't figure out what the strategy was. That was so funny about it. And of course that was hotly contested after the game. Bengals obviously very unhappy that this ends the game, but I'm sorry, I don't want to get ahead. Tell us the rest of the story.
Well, it's hysterical. Dan Fouts is doing the game. And right before the punt, he says, you know, the Ravens have some options here. Cook could run around in the end zone and try to just run out the clock. And even when this happens, he still doesn't quite know what to say. I think after the flags are on the field, he goes, you know, it couldn't have been holding on all of them, but there are four flags out on the field and they're just unsure how to call. And, you know, the refs all huddle up. There's an announcement.
Hey guys, I want to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock, because when I'm not podcasting, my day job is a smart home specialist, and the Eufy Video Smart Lock is perfect. This is what you guys need to go get. It replaces the deadbolt on your door. So now you can come home without fumbling with keys. You can just type in a code, or even better, use your fingerprint to unlock. After 1 second, you put your finger there, pops out, my door's open. It's perfect. It also is an integrated video doorbell. We've all seen the video doorbells. We all know the ones that are out there. I've seen many of them get stolen. No one's going to steal this because it's your door lock. It's impossible for them to steal. There's no monthly fee. Other ones do. But this one, it'll record locally, so you never have to pay if you don't want to. The battery, it lasts up to 4 months. Plus, it notifies you ahead of time. And I mentioned earlier, 1 second fingerprint recognition. No, I meant 1 second till it opens. The AI self-learning chip will learn your fingerprint even faster, and then it opens up. Completely keyless entry, no more keys. And I know I set this up as I'm a smart home specialist, but anyone can install this. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver. That's it. And then you're done. Guys, I love this product. Make sure you check it out. Now, here's the easiest thing to do. Just go on to Google or whatever you prefer and search Eufy Video Lock. That's EUFY Video Lock. Or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your door, just like me, just like Ken.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
There are multiple fouls on the offense for holding. The result of the play is a safety. Those 2 points will count, and by rule, there's no extension of the game. The game is over. Ravens win.
Very good. Very good. There's so much from that game to love. I think there are first of all, I did want to mention this also. Justin Tucker had 3 field goals, 52, 54, and 57 or 59 yards was the third one. Might have been 57.
57, 54.
Yeah. And 52 also, though, right?
And 52, yeah.
Yeah. So three field goals over 50 in this game. It definitely is one of Justin Tucker's career highlights. My college friend Dan Horde was calling the game for the Bengals. So I went to school with him at the time. And he was the first person I remember at the time calling Justin Tucker the greatest kicker in NFL history. And it was in his fifth season. So that's pretty – he was on the board early with that.
It was amazing rewatching this game, just what a weapon Tucker was. So those 3 field goals that you're talking about that were 50 plus, they all happened in the first half. And it was the first time that had ever happened in a game that a kicker converted those. Meanwhile, Cincy, they missed their only extra point attempt of the game, you know, and they're punting like whenever they can. Tucker, he was so automatic then. And I remember the announcers talking about how he hadn't, what did you say? This was his fifth year?
Fifth year, he had yet
to miss a field goal attempt in his career. He is such a weapon.
Yet to miss a field goal attempt of some shorter distance or something.
Oh, I'm sorry. An extra point.
Extra point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we'd see that again in the Saints game and a couple of years later, but
yeah.
But, that this we briefly mentioned the Super Bowl 47 parallels here. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean they ran the same play in the Super Bowl. The difference being they couldn't run out the clock. It wasn't as successful. I would have picked that play if they were able to run it all the way to zero. But in the Super Bowl, there's still 4 seconds left when Cook took the safety, and they had to kick it back to San Francisco. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was one of the things that could have happened if Cook had not gotten a real bomb off is they could have had a fair catch and gotten a free kick. Didn't have a really big leg on who was the kicker for the 49ers that day. It's the old Eagles kicker. I want to say it's Averett, Andy, but that's not quite it.
Was it?
Doesn't matter. I forget who it was. Doesn't matter. But anyway, not a really big leg that day. But you know, other teams should have seen this coming, and I think they probably should have had the discussion on the competition committee prior to happening a second time. Mm-hmm. Probably immediately after that 2012 season, they should have done something about it. But they did change the rule. And we were talking about it in our production meeting, but we don't really know exactly how it was changed, other than I think it's probably another untimed down is added on an offensive foul like this that ends the game.
Or possibly a second is added to the clock.
Could be. My money would be on an untimed down because that's usually the way that thing is done. But yeah. Anyway, the other thing that really gets me about this is obviously a game the Bengals are very upset after and kind of vocal about mm-hmm. not having to punt and yada yada. But what also is true is that Harbaugh after the 2014 playoff loss to the Patriots was all over Belichick for the having a player who was in the game be switched back and forth between an eligible and an ineligible receiver. Mm-hmm. And that he was very upset about that. And it, you know, the point was that he says defense is allowed to substitute if they make changes, an eligible receiver change is a change. And apparently, and this is something that's not really well known, but the officials meet with each team before the game to see if there's any trick plays they have in mind to make sure that they understand what they're trying to accomplish and if that fits within the rules. So they actually have advanced knowledge of these things being considered. Now, probably not in the case of this punt, because they had to really figure this out on the field. But other cases, like putting a, if you want to put your tight end in the middle of your offensive line and offset him, which the Ravens have mm-hmm. done before, that kind of thing, they show that to the officials beforehand in a special meeting, and then they give the officials essentially advanced warning to rule it properly. So it's interesting that this kind of thing, obviously, I think the Patriots must have gotten an advanced ruling from the officials in that game. And it's just kind of interesting that Harbaugh has been on both sides of this argument.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing, right? I'm loving it when the Ravens win a game on this. I'm going ballistic in 2014 when yep. the Ravens can't figure out which one is the eligible receiver, mm-hmm. You know, along with Harbaugh on the sidelines doing the same thing.
Yeah, yeah, he was very upset that day, that's for sure. The Ravens' presence on the competition committee, I think, has always been something that has been a good thing for the team to maintain. And we learned this year from the coin flip situation that three of the four AFC North teams are represented. Only the Browns are not, but the Bengals have some female executive on the group who was obviously campaigning for there to be no coin flip for the Ravens to get the home wild card game had they somehow won that last game at Cincinnati. But the other thing that really bothered me about this is that Tomlin has been on the committee for years. I think even before Harbaugh got there. It makes sense because he's been in the league for longer. But Tomlin was involved in that sideline play where he got fined $500,000 for obstructing Jacoby Jones. I was thinking, you know, fine him $100,000, but the meaningful thing's got to be that he's got to lose his spot on the competition committee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah, you'd funny, be okay with that?
I for sure. But thinking about that, when they had to kick it back to San Francisco, I remember in some of the behind the scenes footage, Joe Flacco talking about how he was going to tackle anybody yes. who ran past him off of the side.
Yeah. Now that's not knowing the rules, because that could have been awarded a touchdown. It's been done in the Cotton Bowl, famously in 1954, I think. Somebody came off the sidelines. You're aware of it, right?
And kind of reminds me of Tomlin not knowing where he was on the field and just stepping in front of Jacoby Jones in the run back.
Yeah, in the Cotton Bowl is actually somebody came off the bench and made the tackle, and they awarded the touchdown. But anyway, Nick, really appreciate having you on. This is a great discussion. Always a lot of fun to do these episodes. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
I'm on Twitter as N Hall, but to be honest, I do not interact much on there. I pay attention to what Ken says, and I listen along to the podcasts.
Well, I really appreciate that. Always nice to hear. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on one of these shows and you have a play to discuss, it's a lot of fun and it doesn't take a ton of prep. I mean, maybe you rewatch the play. Maybe you think a little bit about where the team was in the season, but it doesn't really take a ton of prep, I don't think. I'd love to have you on and meet some new people. I'm trying to have as wide a group as possible do these shows. So please just contact me. DMs on Twitter are always open. I'll respond very quickly. Nick, total turnaround time in terms of original idea to airtime on this, maybe a week, 10 days?
Yeah, I think a week.
Okay. Well, terrific. So it'll be quick that we'll get back and get it recorded. Nick, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you for your time.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic. so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.